Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 224 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you today, or this week. This week, hip-hop artist Saul, or rap artist, whatever you want to call it, man. I don't know. I'm just a white guy trying to be relevant. Trying to be relevant in these days of hip-hop and rap. Saul, amazing artist, amazing rap artist is going to be joining us here shortly. And that sounded extremely white, but I'm going to leave it in. I'm going to leave it in because I am a white person. Saul will be headlining, Timber Winter Music Festival in Leavenworth, Washington. I believe on the January 9th and 10th is Timber Winter Music Festival, and it's going to be freaking fantastic, man. I mean, where's the thing? I'm looking up the schedule. Red Fang, Saul, Deep Sea Diver, Hobosexual, Prom Queen, Legs. I mean, come on. Planes on Paper, The Banner Days, Dude York, all there in Leavenworth, Washington. It's going to be super, super fun. Get your tickets now, folks. They are on sale. Go to timbermusicfest.com and purchase your tickets. And they've got all sorts of activities planned for you. A hot toddy garden. Yeah, that's right, hot toddy garden. Up in the snow, man, in the mountains. It's a winter music festival. Does anywhere else in the country do something like this? I don't think so. So plan it now, will ya? Come on. Let's do it. Deep Sea Diver is going to be there. Did I say that already? They've been on the show. Hobosexual, on the show. Saul, on the show this week. Red Fang, been on the show like twice. Prom Queen, been on the show like twice. Legs, been on the show like twice. Planes on Paper, on the show. Yeah, you know what to do, folks. Go to air-raid.net. You can find out a lot about these bands and these artists. This week is no different. We talk a lot about Saul's trip to Haiti, which is super intense and very informative, and I hope you guys really, really enjoy it. We have a great conversation, amongst other things, about Haiti, about his music and what inspires him. It's a fantastic conversation. To switch gears a little bit, how was your Thanksgiving? I hope yours was good. Mine was great, man. We got out of the city for about 4 days, and spent Thanksgiving the holiday with my in-laws, and it was our first time making the full Thanksgiving dinner, which went off without a hitch. It was super good. My wife made the turkey, and it was amazing. It was so good. She brined the whole thing. You know, it was like sitting in this brine for like 24 hours or something like that, maybe a bit longer. Oh, man. It was fantastic. I hope you guys had a good time, too. But what comes along with the holiday season, right, is that you get tired of your family, which happened last night. So we stayed 2 days with my in-laws, and then we stayed 2 days with my parents and my family. And, I mean, it all is going well until somebody brings up, you know, a political conversation or something along those lines. And it culminated in a disagreement and an argument pertaining to the Ferguson riots or the Ferguson protests. I'm going to say protests, not riots. Scratch that. Protests. Some people have been rioting. They, you know, have been arrested, and most of them are not even from Ferguson. So I don't think that counts against the Ferguson people, the good people of Ferguson, Missouri. Come on, man. But yeah, got into it a little bit with my dad, and that was it. That was it. It was like a switch was flipped, and we that was it. That was it for our getting along. That was it, man. It didn't take long. It took a day, and then we got into it on about the Ferguson thing. And he's a liberal guy, but he still didn't agree with some stuff. And then I was not happy about that. And yeah, we got into a little bit of an argument. Voices were raised, and now we're home. Now we're home, and it's fine, and it's freezing cold. So with that said, you may hear a heater on in this episode because in the backyard studios gets a little chilly, guys. So I apologize for that. But let's get right into it, shall we? We're going to feature music today off of Saul's excellent album called Eyes Open, and it's available now. And you can find that at Saul Says, SOLSAYS, SaulSays.com, and you can buy it there. You can also follow him on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. He's a fantastic dude, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation. Okay, off of Eyes Open, this song is called Jump In, and we'll be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Saul. All right? Yeah, there you go. Let's do it. Okay, be back in a moment. If the water's deep, use your feet and jump in. Jump in. If you ain't afraid, then you ain't chasing nothing. Life is sink or swim, so jump in. My wife is lovely, thank God. My muse, she love me. Music is my baby. Ooh, she drive me crazy. I need her on the daily like biscuits need gravy. But sometimes I need to unplug and jump on a plane to Haiti. The rhythm play me, so I play it back. She takes me all over the map. Soaking in where I'm at. Coconuts and rum. Coasting in the Jeep, follow the ocean to my lovely and my two high crew. Past long nights and hard days, when you ain't chasing fame, it's a different ball game. I just wanna play shows and make music, travel the globe and write the soundtrack to it. I think I just woke up from a dream. I think I just woke up from a dream. I think I just woke up from a dream. The sheet. She told me to go to sleep. I said, hold up, I'm rolling one up and floating out to sea. She said, oh no, you don't just leave me like that. I said, you're right, cause everywhere I go, my city's on my back. Write some raps, get some plaques, then it's back to the travel life. Was gone for a year, and I'ma leave in another 5. I'll never retire, I simply live on the road. Cause when you love what you do, you never grow old. She gave me head, and then I hope. Now we spread our babies everywhere we go. Thinking bigger picture brought me round the world with music. My peers may be clueless, but these rappers can be stupid, stupid, stupid. I just might go make a million, give 100K away. I'm the type to feed the children, then get ignited on the stage. Women love me and I love them back, but not as much as rap. Married to the music, no wonder I'm fucking back. Still a I think I just woke up from a dream. I think I just woke up from a dream. I think I just woke up from a dream. In my dreams, making music till they bury me.
jump in.
Did you go down any of the protests?
I actually did last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, where at? The one up to Capitol Hill or something?
Yeah, I caught up with the people that I think they started at Seattle Central. I caught up with them around 12th and Pike and just, you know, followed. I don't think anyone really knew where we were going. That one was heading towards the CD.
Yeah.
It took the most roundabout way. We were going down very small residential streets at times. So, you know, I would have loved to see things go downtown, but I thought that the sentiment was really good.
Oh, sure.
And for me, I just had to get out of the house. You know, I was honestly pretty emotional, and I just had to get off of Twitter and just be around people.
Yeah, dude. I was so angry. Like, I can't say that I was surprised by it. You know, by that decision?
Me neither.
Which made me all the more angrier.
Right.
Like, I wanted to be surprised and be like, yeah, all right. We're making a change. Things are going our way here. But, man, it's so fucked.
Yeah. I mean,
You can swear on this, by the way.
For sure. For sure. The crazy thing to me is how safe people generally feel.
Yeah.
And how that safety is really a fallacy. You know, like, after the Boston, you know, marathon, there was like martial law in Boston.
Oh,
you
sure.
know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, in like in Ferguson, you know, for the past couple months, ever since the shooting, there's been a lot of really sketch things happening with the freedom of the press and the people in freedom of speech, you know, and the militarization of the police down there.
Well, you were watching it. Everybody was watching it happen. We were watching it unfold.
And thank God for Twitter. I mean, it's proved to be a huge tool in other countries with huge things happening. And I think that Twitter is a really big part of the way that this generation talks about what's going on. And I like the dialogue. I also got some really racist and ignorant tweets last night.
Oh,
but,
sure.
Yeah. I guess that's part of the dialogue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, see, you're working on a totally different level, too. Like, I mean, you have, what, how many Twitter followers do you have? This is a like stupid question.
14,000.
Okay, 14,000. So I've got like 500.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, when you put something out there, right, and people retweet it and you know, you get like 50, 100 retweets on something, right, there's bound to be some fucking knucklehead, you know, somewhere in the world that sees that and thinks what he's saying or she is saying is funny, maybe to a certain extent.
And there's people searching for keywords, looking for fights. But, I mean, really the interesting thing is, and one of the reasons why I think it's important as an artist who has, you know, a stance on a lot of things, it's important for me to talk about these things because, you know, being in the position where we're making, you know, popular art, you have followers for a lot of different reasons from a lot of different places.
Sure.
And we're in a position to facilitate a dialogue.
Yeah.
And we also have to understand the responsibility and just the reality of who we are and where we are, you know?
Yeah.
I actually ran into Macklemore at the protests, and I ran into a few of my friends, but he and I were talking about it, and he, way more so than my 14,000 followers, is on a pedestal and has a platform, you know?
Oh, sure. Sure.
And he tweeted something last night, which I agree with, and I'm sure you'd agree with, and it's, you know, to a lot of people, I mean, Fox News talks about when celebrities, you know, say it.
Right.
It's for the same reason that we got that lame Obama speech, is that somebody in that position, if you say something too far to the left or too far to the right, you're going to, you know, shock a lot of people, and like a lot of people are just not even really going to hear you.
Well, plus it, like, I mean, it so often gets taken out of context, right?
Right.
Like news outlets, especially cable news outlets, I don't care if it's MSNBC or Fox, they're going to take what they want to hear out of what somebody said. Like, you know, they could take like two or three words out of a full paragraph and be like, this is crazy, you know, what this person said, or this is racist, or this is homophobic, or you know, or this is too right wing. You know, it goes both ways on that.
Yeah,
yeah. So what did Macklemore probably got some pushback on something?
Well, right? I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, actually, it was funny. I left the protest right around everybody was taking it to the freeway,
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And I saw later that some of the news channels and stuff, for the most part, people are really respectful here in Seattle of you know, there are a lot of people who came up to both me and him and were just happy to see us there. And, you know, we were happy to be there and just be a part of it, because it was not about – I mean, it's, the only thing it's about is about a bunch of people coming together for something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I saw that the news cameras caught up with him at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And there's videos of him running around on the freeway. So, you know, I'm curious to see how viral that goes. You know, you know, people want to give people a hard time for anything, really.
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely don't.
Totally.
I honestly don't look forward to that side of things if I ever reach that level of fame.
Yeah, totally. You right. Know. Right. Saul joining me here in the backyard. Thank you so much for coming over tonight, man.
Yeah, man.
This is very happy that you came.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, man. Thank you. I have been listening to this record, Eyes Open, pretty much nonstop for like the past, like, I don't know, month.
Wow.
And it's fantastic. It's so good.
That's
but
awesome.
This came out a little while ago, right?
Yeah, this came out around this time last year.
Okay, so it's almost a year old. Mm-hmm. That's how far behind I am. You met my kids, man. They're a handful.
Yeah, no, I got you. I mean,
can't keep up.
You know, it takes me. I'm only now starting to work on the next album.
Are you
so?
Really?
So you're caught up.
Okay, good. Yeah, good. So I'm coming in right on the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Saul.
Right.
And you're playing coming up. You're playing Timberfest.
Yeah.
Coming up in what's the date on that? Damn it!
I think I play January 9th.
January 9th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We'll make sure I have that later.
Cool.
Right. Yeah, I'll edit that in.
Right.
It's fine.
Got it.
So Saul, where are you from, man? Where do you come from originally?
Seattle, born and raised.
Born and raised?
Yeah, the North End.
North End. So yeah. Up here, kind of.
Yeah, further, actually. I was born in the house. I was born in the Capitol Hill Group Health.
Okay.
And then I grew up around Fremont the first few years of my life, and then I lived in Shoreline for most of my youth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a Western Washington kid, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. What was life like growing up in North Seattle?
You know, I never felt at home.
No?
Not really. I felt at home with my family.
Yeah.
And I found a community, you know, really I found like one other family in my neighborhood, and that was us against the rest of the neighborhood, really.
Yeah.
There's a lot of conflict with my peers. Yeah,
Why? What was the conflict?
You know, I don't really. It's just, you know, just like rumbles, you know, and just like, I don't know, just like running around, just being boys. You know what I mean? Like
it was.
I mean, no one ever really got too hurt or anything, but there was like big rivalries in the neighborhood and stuff. You know, it was never anything like gang stuff. It was really just like old school rumbles and like, you know, like. Football games gone bad and just like grudges against other kids. And you know, it was actually, I grew up, that other family, my best friend, his name is Ben Futter. He ended up being Phoenix Jones.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know who Phoenix Jones is.
I do. He's been on this show a long time ago. Yeah. Yeah. In his full regalia.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to listen to that episode.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. So me and him, he was actually my first rap partner.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that I was in a group with Phoenix Jones. And
the Guardian of Seattle.
Exactly. And he was good. He was better than me, I think.
Really?
For the first few years. You know, but I really had the passion for music, you know.
Sure.
Music is a lifelong thing for me. And for him, he doesn't like things he's not good at.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I think at some point he decided he wasn't good enough at rap. So he started bowling. And he became like the number one Washington State bowler.
You're fucking kidding me.
In high school. I've watched him personally with my own eyes bowl multiple 300 games.
In a row.
He's probably done it in a row. I've watched him more than once bowl a 300 game. He's done it in league play. He has like the rings, like Super Bowl rings.
Shut up.
Yeah. And then at some point he got over, he was done bowling and he started doing MMA, which I'm sure he told you about. And he was amazing. You know, he won like 20 fights before he ever even lost.
Yeah.
You know, and then at some point he just hit the streets, you know.
He is, I saw him. He is dating a woman who has a kid in my kid's daycare.
Okay.
Up in Shoreline. Yeah. And he was at this. He was at this. This Halloween dinner thing that they had.
Yeah.
Up at the daycare.
Was he wearing the?
No.
The
costume? No, he was not. No, he was not.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So.
So what kind of kid were you, man? Were you like a scrapper? Were you instigating some of these little?
No,
backyard scuffles.
I was always a very level-headed. I felt like always like a pretty nice person.
Yeah,
in these situations kind of always found me, or it was, you know, I guess Phoenix Jones who's rubbing people the wrong way. So I mean, yeah, I mean, I grew up around a lot of kids that were, I actually grew up around like a foster home. I wasn't in a foster home, but. Mm-hmm. My whole neighborhood, like half of the buildings on the block were foster homes.
Oh, really?
So there was kids coming in and out of the neighborhood. So yeah. It was just kind of the environment, you know, which is a really intense environment where, you know, kids obviously have crazy life circumstances.
Oh, sure.
If they're at a point where, you know, they can't live with their parents anymore, you know, so yeah. The kids are going through a lot and, you know, and territory and just respect and reputation is a big thing in that environment, you know?
Oh, sure.
So I was kind of just in the middle of all that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were, would you say you were bullied?
I was never bullied because all my friends were the biggest guys. So we always won the fights, you know?
That's good, man.
But, I mean, I was really creative kid. I drew a lot before I started making music. Drawing and painting was everything. You know, I spent a lot of time outside, like playing sports and stuff outside. But but generally speaking, I spent most of my free time making art. You know, and it's still that way. You know, it's no longer drawing, but I write now. I write a lot of music. I write different types of things. I write poetry. I write, you know, I just write.
Sure.
And I don't draw that much anymore, which is kind of crazy. But I've always been expressing myself creatively.
Yeah, that's cool. Were your parents pretty artistic as well?
Not at all.
No?
No.
Nothing? Not an artistic bone in their body?
Not
There's
really.
Got to be something, man.
I mean,
you picked it up from somewhere, right?
My mom's pretty good at dancing.
Yeah?
She's from the Caribbean, and I heard a lot of different types of music and danced a lot as a kid. But my parents don't make any type of art. My aunt is an amazing artist. Both of my great-grandfathers were artists. My great-grandfather on my Haitian side was, like, a revolutionary poet. Like, super respected, you know. He has a Wikipedia page, you know, even though he died 100 years ago.
Wow.
Like, really left his mark in that culture. Uh-huh. And on the other side, my great-grandfather was a carpenter. But besides that, everybody, since the beginning of time, has been teachers. Which I think is super,
really?
Which is super relevant to the person that I am, having parents as teachers, and the way that I make music and the types of music, the types of songs that I make, and the relationship that I have with my fans and the dialogue, I think is really affected by the idea of learning and being a student and being a teacher.
Sure. So both your parents were teachers.
Mm-hmm.
What, like grade school or something? Public school?
My
what?
Mom taught at the alternative school that I went to.
Oh, really?
I went to an alternative school, and my dad taught at a community college.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Well, what did your dad teach?
Computer science.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And before that, he taught oceanography.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's killer. So you got a smart dad.
Yeah, he's the smartest person I know.
Yeah?
For sure.
I'm a pretty smart guy. You know me now.
Yeah, it's true. I'll have to. You guys will have to have a conversation sometime.
We'll battle it out in your backyard. Yeah.
Perfect.
So you said your parents are from Haiti. Both parents.
My mom's from Haiti.
Mom's from Haiti.
And my dad's from Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Jewish guy from Brooklyn.
Is she originally from Haiti, born and raised?
Yeah, she was born and raised in Port-au-Prince.
Wow.
She left Haiti when she was 18, during the Duvalier dictatorship, and then she went to Puerto Rico. And went to college, and then she got into graduate school at the University of Washington. And came from Puerto Rico, had never been to the United States, let alone the Northwest, and came to Seattle and saw rain and snow and all that stuff for the first time.
Holy shit.
Sorry,
she
not rain.
Freezing.
Yeah, no. she couldn't take it, and she's moved to California now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But she lasted like 25 years here in Seattle.
Wow, yeah. Man. Wow. Mm-hmm. So you got Haitian in you.
Yeah, half Haitian, half Jewish.
And you sing about that a little bit in some of these songs on your album.
Definitely on Eyes Open, because that project I recorded in the 3 months right after I went to Haiti for the first time.
Yeah.
So I actually traveled abroad for about a year before I made this project. And that trip had a huge impact on everything that I wrote.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So I'm sure you saw a lot of devastation over there still. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like, what, 2 years after the big earthquake, too, right?
It's been the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere for a long time.
Yeah.
It's now the poorest country in the world. I went to a lot of intense places. I wasn't on vacation.
Yeah.
And Haiti and Port-au-Prince in particular were the most intense situation.
The devastation was insane.
The earthquake was really bad. Things were bad before that. Things are almost even worse now.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, do you still have family over there?
Yeah. I've got family in Port-au-Prince. I got family in Jacmel and in the southwest. My mom's oldest sister lives there. I stayed with her in a little village called Abrico for about 3 weeks. She moved out there in like the mid 70s and started a school. And now she has 12 schools. She's the superintendent of 12 schools.
That's wonderful.
And they're like super, I mean, in Haiti, it used to be that you couldn't go to school unless you had a uniform and you could speak French. And most of these kids, I mean, so everyone in Haiti speaks Haitian Creole, and French is the colonial language. And for a long time, it was the official language until like less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So most kids, their parents didn't get very far in school or go to school. And because of that, their parents don't speak French. So, of course, the kids don't speak French.
Yeah.
So what this created was a situation where only a very small percentage of all children.
And that was some sort of law?
Yeah. And now it's still no longer. So Creole, there was a progressive movement. Creole is now the official language of Haiti, as it should be. And you don't have to speak French in order to go to school.
Uh-huh.
You learn French in school, which is how it should be. You know, you can learn the French and English.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? But you still have to be able to afford a uniform in order to go to school. And most families live on less than $1 a day. So she started schools where you don't need any of that. All kids can go to school. And there's a meal every day, lunch every day. And this is a country where a lot of people don't get lunch. So
yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, she's doing some cool stuff.
Yeah.
That was really cool for me to see.
Yeah, so I take it you're still in contact with your family down there.
I talk to her a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we Skype, and she gives me career advice even. She's
she's
also one of the smartest people that I know. I have some amazing elders that have guided me through life.
That's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
So what's going on down there, man? Like, you don't hear about it on the news anymore. You know, there's nothing about Haiti, you know, on the news. I mean, are they rebuilding? Like, what?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think only about 5% of the damage has been rebuilt.
Really?
3 years. It's about to be five years,
right?
Yeah. This January.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, the problem, as with a lot of places that are, you know, in dire condition, you know, is maybe it'll be popular, or there'll be something that happens that brings the public eye to it. And a lot of NGOs will either start or move to that country. For example, move to Haiti after the earthquake.
Right.
But as soon as the public eye and the public interest and the money, you know, and the donations kind of stop flowing in, a lot of those people leave, you know. And so only being somewhere for a year or 2 years at the most is not enough to make real change and to rebuild. And at the same time, a lot of these NGOs are not working with Haitians. They're working for, you know, and they're trying to help, you know, but a lot of times people come to a place thinking already that they know what those people need.
Right.
Before they even ask them.
Yeah.
You know, what do you need? So
NGOs, like you're saying, like Red Cross, things
like
that.
Or even just people, just, you know, people, you know, even, I mean, even myself, I might go somewhere and have a perception of what it's going to be like, or you know, what the problems are,
sure.
But not until you're really there. and you've been there and you connect with the people, you know, can you really find out? So I think a lot of these resources need to be going to help Haitians build something of their own.
Yeah.
You know, and be more connected. And some of them are doing that, you know, but not enough. You know, like, for example, my aunt doing what she does, there's very few Haitians, and I'm not trying to big her up or anything. There's very few Haitians that are in that position that mm-hmm. have those resources to be able to help themselves and to help each other.
Or it sounds like you even have the education to do something.
Yeah. Right? You know, and it's not their
fault. To start something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really, really tough place to be. That's why I'm trying to go back soon. Like this spring, I want to get back there. You know, I made a little goal to myself to try to get there every couple of years because it's a big – it was always a big part of my identity growing up. And now, I mean, it took me, you know, 22 years to go there. And I need to keep going back and keep building that relationship.
Yeah, sure. You know? Sure. Does your mom ever go back too?
She hasn't been back since my grandpa died. It's been a while.
Oh, really?
I'm trying to get her back over there.
Yeah.
It's scary though. You know,
it sounds like
for,
it. I mean,
for me, I'm younger and it's just more important for me to go than to be afraid.
Yeah.
You know, and, I kind of just got over that fear a while ago, you know, because of the way that I travel.
What's scary about it though? Is it just seeing the devastation, or is there violence going on?
Yeah, I mean, Port-au-Prince is the most. It's just like survival of the fittest, dog
really?
Eat dog. I mean, at night, man, driving around at night is like being in like an apocalyptic movie. You know, I mean, it's really? Just like fires everywhere.
Yeah.
Just fights on every street, you know, gunfire. It's just like, I mean, I'm not trying to exaggerate or like animate anything.
Sure.
I wouldn't want to say anything that wasn't true. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's just really wild, you know?
Well, that does sound scary though.
Yeah, it is. But I still had to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for my mom, she is at a different point of her life. You know, she left. She left during a really, really bad dictatorship, you know, and her family was having a really hard time. And, you know, I've never been in that position. I had the choice of going back.
Right.
You know,
right.
For her, she has a lot of hard memories there.
Yeah.
So when she's ready, hopefully she'll go. And I would love to go with her.
Man, that sounds intense.
Yeah.
That sounds really intense.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed.
I mean, it's not my experience, you know, and like that was a really good thing for me to go because I'm Haitian American. I'm half white. My mom is mulatto. So even her growing up, she had resources because of, you know, cultural and systemic racism that, you know, she had access that most Haitians don't have.
Yeah.
She doesn't look like most Haitians either. You know what I mean? So for me to go as a Haitian American and to be in this position and actually be an outsider in reality. Like I learned some Creole, but I know very little, you know? So to be able to go and have that experience was super valuable and really, really, really humbling for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. Does it seem like, and this will be my last question about Haiti, and then we should probably talk about your music.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's something that I'm very, very interested in is, like, do the people down there, are they angry, like, with how America has kind of, like, because America goes through waves, right? Like there's a, and I'm sure probably the rest of the, you know, the rest of the world is kind of, operates kind of the same way, is that you hear about an epic tragedy, right? And people donate, and they hope that their money is going to help, you know, and it's in the forefront of our minds, and you know, we're all talking about it, and then a couple weeks pass, and maybe another tragedy comes up and takes the forefront. You know, like, and it always makes me wonder, like, the people that are involved in that tragedy, the first one, are like, whoa, where'd everybody go? You know, where'd all the help go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where'd the Red Cross go? Now they're sending, you know, boats elsewhere or something like that. Are people angry about that? Are they hurt?
You know, I think with the history of Haiti,
yeah,
there's very little expectation when it comes from the West.
Really?
They're obviously, you know, colonized by the French, and then they defeated the French. It was actually the first successful slave rebellion in the world, and they became the first black republic. So they were a country, you know, before any other black nation in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they got blackballed by the entire West.
Right.
And at the time, they were the jewel in the crown of the French Empire. They were the number one exporter of sugarcane. You know, they had coffee, they had cotton. They had a lot of resources to be one of the richest countries, certainly small countries in the world.
Sure.
But nobody would trade with them.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the French put them in debt for their losses in war in order to recognize them as a country. So Haiti had to pay the French back for their losses in property, which included slaves, millions of slaves. They had to pay the French back in order to get finally recognized as a country, you know, 30 years later or something.
Really?
And, yes. And it took them 100 years to pay that money back.
Of course.
In fact, there's pay it back, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah.
There is actually I don't know where it stands now, but there's like a petition in France to reimburse Haiti that money now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that from the beginning, you know, there's a little faith in the relationship with the West, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Haiti's had a crazy rough history. You know, very few presidents have ever been reelected legitimately. You know, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of turbulence, you know, and so foreign aid has been something that is just not something you can count on. You know, like you said, it's something that only comes for different reasons and it's not consistent.
Right.
You know,
right.
There has to be a real, you know, just aid, just rice coming in or water, you know, these things that doesn't build an economy. That doesn't build an infrastructure.
Sure.
In fact, when Clinton has an interesting history with Haiti, but he sent a bunch of rice over to Haiti, like literally just like ships and ships of rice, and it destroyed the local rice economy. You know, so it's just like
these things put the rice growers out of business.
Exactly. Oh. And they still haven't, you know, regathered themselves. So these things are super fragile, man. And I don't know the answer, but the answer.
What the hell are you here for?
No, but the answer to your question, though. Sorry that I had to give a little context.
No, not at all, not at all.
But
that's
the
great.
Important thing was the way that Haiti was built.
Yeah,
and that history of revolution is a source of a lot of pride for Haitians.
Okay,
and they have a really, really, really strong culture and a lot of pride, and that can't be taken away by tragedy. So, you know, people smile a lot. People celebrate, you know, life and are super grateful for everything, you know.
That's good.
Faith is a very strong thing there, and values of family and everything is super important. So, you know, I met a lot of really, really happy people when I was there, but I also saw a lot of really, really rough stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was my experience in visiting South America. You know, I went to Venezuela and went around the country for about a month.
Cool. I have family there too.
You do?
Yeah.
Where at?
In Caracas and outside of Caracas.
Where outside of Caracas?
I don't remember the name of the village, to be honest. I went there when I was in high school. It's Haitian family that left around the same time that my mom did because it was, you know.
On the Caribbean side?
Yeah.
So, that like Coro?
Is that the name of a city?
That's the name of a town on the Caribbean that's like basically looks out towards Haiti, I believe.
No, I mean, I don't know if they're looking towards Haiti or anything like that.
Yeah,
I just remember being close to the water.
Gotcha.
My bad.
No, not at all, man. I mean, I had it. That was like one of those trips of a lifetime that you go on, and it's like, and you know, realistically, I have lived a fairly sheltered life, man. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I've spent all my life here in Washington. I've done well, you know, my parents did well. So, you know, I was able to be picked up and kind of shouldered like that and protected a lot too.
Yeah,
and then going to a country like that and seeing how even just the middle class lives in a country like that, like is pretty eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, most places in the world, in my opinion, they don't really have a middle class. You know
sure.
what I mean? It's like there's such a socioeconomic disparity between the rich and the poor that it's like, most people are just pretty poor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then there's a small amount of people that are super well off.
Oh, sure.
You know, like going to places like Brazil and South Africa and stuff. It's in India. I went to India for 2 months on that same trip. Yeah, it's wild. I think it's really cool that you had that experience. It's really important to step outside of that comfort zone.
Oh, sure, sure.
And to kind of have some context to how most of the world lives.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I mean, even with issues within our own country, you know, being able to understand that not everybody has the same reality that we have, you know, that there's different perspectives and different life experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that is one thing that I think is severely lacking in this country today is that people don't travel to the, you know, they only travel to their comfort zone. So like a lot of people will go to Caracas, but they'll stay in the Hilton. You know, or whatever, you know, nice hotel enclosed area that they can go to in there, right? They're not going to these, you know, small communities like Coro or Merida or, you know, little towns in the hills in the Venezuelan Andes, you know. It's like, yeah, I mean, you gotta open up your mind a little bit and visit these places to really see how the world works.
That's why I traveled. That's why I love to travel alone. And like when I went to these places, I was alone, so I didn't have to ever compromise it for somebody else's comfort zone.
Sure.
And I was really just able to get in touch with my instincts and who I am and what type of experiences I gravitate towards.
How old were you when you did a lot of this travel?
I left when I was 23 and I came back when I was 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long were you traveling?
10 months.
10 months, and almost a whole year.
Yeah, I went to 10 different countries.
Wow.
I've been lucky enough to travel before that. But on that trip, I actually traveled. I was awarded a fellowship at the UW right when I graduated. So the year after I graduated, I released my first album, Yours Truly, and then I left on this trip, when things were popping off with music.
You didn't tour or anything? You just left for...
I did a West Coast tour. I did Sasquatch. Had like a really breakout
Oh, that was just a couple years ago, right?
That was when I played a smaller stage of Sasquatch. I just played it this last year as well.
Oh, okay.
So that was when I did the Bigfoot stage.
Gotcha.
But a few years ago, I did like the little bootleg hip-hop stage.
That's it. Yeah. I was at that one.
Yeah.
I was at that one.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And then... And then I did Showbox Market. I did like a farewell show at Market and sold it out, which was, I mean, it's still amazing, but that was like a huge accomplishment for me.
Sure.
And then I just left.
And just went traveling.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man. And were you married at the time too?
No.
No? Okay. That's what I was going
to, married to the game.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Rap life.
So you're not married?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I heard you earlier when we were talking inside the house, you said you had a sister-in-law, so that must be... From brother or something?
Yeah, my brother's married.
Okay,
I have an older brother, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break, and then when we come back, we'll actually talk about your music.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
Well, yeah, perfect, actually. This is a song that I wrote when I was traveling. I wrote it when I was in South India, so it's really relevant to everything that we've been talking about.
Awesome. That's how I like this to work out. That's cool. Great. This is called Old Hymn off of the album Eyes Open, which is available now. And you can find, where would you like people to buy this thing? At SaulSays.com?
If they want a physical copy, if they want to get it online, you know, they can get it on iTunes, Spotify, you know, whatever you got to do.
Everywhere. All right. Old Hymn by Saul. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Saul.
Yep.
There you go. We'll be back in a moment. My heart feels weak enough to give up. Sometimes tears flow quicker than the river. Smiles get thinner. Mouths don't get dinner. And somehow we build houses even bigger. Back home, my homie bought a Cadillac. Out here, that's cash enough to bring the dead back. My belly's empty, and not because it's Ramadan. I simply lost my appetite seeing children starve. That's what's really hard. Not your silly bars. Not your grill, not your car, not the pills you pop. Marvin said it, you better know what's going on. And life's a question. Answer when the song ends. Answer when the world ends. Dancing so the earth spins. If the music stops, we'll get planted in the dirt quick. Word is they talking about us. They say we almost famous. Guess I forgot about it when I got that plane ticket.
more humble than he's ever been. Sun up on his golden skin, feeling something like a fugitive, something like a fugitive, running from the old him. Representing light and men, forever young, learning from the light within. Yeah, something like a fugitive, something like a fugitive, running from the old him. Keep it rolling. Yeah. Zilla. Yeah. I never dreamed to be a rap star. I never saved up for a fast car. But I did act selfish a bit, buy stupid shit, and waste the tools that I had. Sold out shows, money in the bank, but my ego not smoke yet, at least I don't think. But who am I to say? You tell me, have I changed? And if I have, I pray it's for the better, in Jesus' name. All Lord Krishna, everything, smoking hash on the backwaters, Kingfisher drank. Thinking bigger thoughts than you ever think. If you seen what I seen, then you goddamn better change. Donated thousands from the earthquake. Still I felt helpless in a higher place. Searching for a purpose when I'm buying drinks, buying clothes, seeing people die is getting kinda old. More humble than he's ever been. Sun up on his golden skin. Feeling something like a fugitive, something like a fugitive, running from the old him. Representing like a man, forever young.
It is, it's much easier. And this was like a $30 program that I got at like Best Buy or something like that. It's called Home Studio or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's for like it's basically, you know, home recording for dummies, pretty much.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, it works for me.
Yeah.
I know earlier I told you that I'm a pretty smart guy, but I'm really not. That was a lie.
Did you ever play music? I see you have guitars.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you play music?
I do. Cool. Well, you know, I'm just starting to kind of get back into it and play Dope. Some more. Like it's hard, you know, when you're a dad and you have two jobs, and yeah, it's hard to kind of fit music in. I was always a music fan. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, I played music. I played in a couple bands here in Seattle.
Dope.
Yeah. Used to play with Pearl Jam.
Nice.
No, I didn't. That's another lie.
Hey,
a few of the
guys in Pearl Jam jam like in a few different bands. So you know, I would never doubt you. You know,
I was gonna
try until you lie to me. I'm gonna believe you. You know, so now
perfect.
Now I know not to trust.
You can only cry wolf so many times.
Right.
That's right. So you grew up here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Or just north of here, and music and art were always kind of in your life, mm-hmm. right? What were you listening to as a kid? Like, what was pushing your buttons, man?
I listened to a lot of bad music. And I listened to some good music. Unfortunately, the good music is what influenced me more. You know?
Everybody's got those skeletons in their closet about what they were a fan of back when they were a kid. Do you have something that's embarrassing that you would like to share, Saul?
I'm not really that embarrassed by it, but like some of the first... So on one hand, I heard a lot of dope hip-hop at a really early age from like my brother and my cousins and stuff. Because they would have like Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style, and Tupac, you know, tapes and stuff, and I would hear that. But then on the other hand, I would, you know, watch TV, and I loved like, you know, Cash Money, and like a lot of like Limp Bizkit's probably the most embarrassing one.
That's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But at the same time, I was in like third grade, you know.
Yeah.
So right, you know, right. I like Limp Bizkit for a moment.
Sure.
And then I probably heard, you know, whatever song they had with DMX and Method Man. I'm like, no, those guys are doing it right.
Right, right.
They're the good rappers. And then I dove into like Wu-Tang and DMX. And actually, you know, DMX is one of my favorite rappers.
Still to this day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not... He, you know, he's had a really rough time, and he's not really making much music now.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, is he still even around? Like, is he...
I mean,
still making music?
Yeah, I don't know. He plays shows here or there, mm-hmm. you know. But I don't actively listen to his music every day. But the music that I listen to and at the time of my life, it has such a big impact on me that it's definitely affected like who I am You know, and the fact that I make music is partially because of DMX, even though you wouldn't hear it in my music.
Do you want me to edit all this out? Should we take this out?
No, if you want to take it out. But no, DMX is legit. Limp Bizkit, you can edit that out.
Yeah, okay, we'll take that part out. We'll just beep it. Beep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But no, yeah, DMX is super dope.
So when did you start actually, like, you know, physically starting to get into music? Like, did you start playing instruments or?
Yeah,
or
I played. I played in my school jazz band.
Yeah,
played trumpet. And
trumpet.
Yeah,
man, I always wanted to play trumpet.
Yeah, I haven't played it since then. Yeah. Really, I played it probably third grade to fifth grade, and then right around fifth grade is when I started rapping.
Yeah,
yeah,
fifth grade.
So yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, what are you rapping about in fifth grade?
What were my first raps about? I remember...
Gotta be girls, right?
No, not really. No? I was super political. You know, like I was...
In fifth grade?
Yeah. I was, you know, I read a lot of Malcolm X stuff, uh-huh. And I was really into social issues, and I was really far left. If I wrote those raps now,
uh-huh.
I would be on some sort of list from the FBI. Straight up. I said some very, very... questionable things about George Bush.
I think I did too. So yeah. I might be on a list as well.
Yeah. So really, really, really political music.
Are you rapping? I mean, are you just like freestyling? Like
I was always writing raps. I've never.
Yeah.
I freestyled. Actually, the earliest rapping that I did was freestyling, and that was like on the bus on the way home. You know, with my friends. But when I started really like writing music, I don't know, it just became more of the process of writing it. Like literally like the pen and the paper is like half of the reason that I do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like it's not completely like free flow. You know, a lot of freestyling is to get a reaction and stuff. It's much more like therapeutic and kind of writing in the same way that people who might write a journal or, you know, just write their thoughts on something, you know,
it's
much more of a process in that way for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So it's cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
It's cathartic for you.
Yeah.
And has it always been that way, or was it just like,
yeah, from a really, really early age.
Yeah.
My music has always been very personal and very introspective and, mm-hmm. you know, talking about things that I think matter.
Yeah.
Things that are important to me.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
So do you ever write? Cause I've noticed that with this album,
mm-hmm.
Which is the one that I've listened to the most, so it's the one that I know the best. But with Eyes Open, it does sound like a lot of this is fairly personal material.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is it all autobiographical?
All of this project, except for a few of the... There's a song called City of Walls where I talk about a lot of the socioeconomic issues that I saw in places like... Most so in places like Brazil and South Africa. You know, I talk about the legacy of apartheid and kind of where things are now in South Africa. And I tell some stories about people that I met when I was traveling.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's definitely, you know, I talk about my stories and my experiences, but also the things that I see around me.
Okay. So, and you can formulate kind of a fictional story around that.
It's not always necessarily. Yeah, it's just talking about circumstances and issues. You know, it's not always like a narrative. You know, with like characters. You know?
Sure. Yeah, that was one thing that I never got. Like when I was always writing music, I would always try to create some sort of fictional,
mm-hmm.
like character. You know, that it would be about, which sounds awful. Like that sounds just like, you know, it's like, oh, what are you doing, creating like a Seven Doors or Three Doors Down song or something? No, it was better than that. It was better than that. I swear. I always had problems writing lyrics, especially lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could write a melody and stuff on the guitar, but I could never write lyrics. Like they would always come out cheesy.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the cheesiness factor comes from like knowing what's cool. You know what I mean? So it's like you have to legitimately just have a cool factor about yourself or just be in touch with like what is, you know, cool or not. Either that
just blew my mind.
It's either that
makes so much sense.
It's either that or you create cool, which very few people have that
right
that ability. But if you're an artist, you know, you have an ability to influence people, and I don't know, it's, you know, it's a blank slate, so you can do anything. And a lot of times, you know, magic happens. And that's why, like, some of the most geeky, I mean, I'm a nerd about many things, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm awkward about all sorts of stuff. But when it comes to performing, and when it comes to writing music, and, you know, the confidence that I have, it's, you know, it's next level. And that's part of hip hop, and that's part of being a performer.
Yeah, that's great. Know? I mean, you have to have some sort of confidence in yourself, right, as an right. artist. To be able to, especially like a musician, to get up on a stage and do your art in front of people.
And
right?
for people to sing along, for people to want to see you, to want to, you know, hear you.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And to support you.
Yeah. Do you think that confidence is much more important in hip hop and rap?
Yeah, I think it has more of a legacy in the way that hip hop was formed, mm-hmm. you know, because it's, I mean, there's the emceeing party side of rapping, which is like is the real beginning, but then there's the whole street culture of battling,
sure,
and ciphers where it's about
ciphers. What's that?
So it's just like a, you know, like anyone can flow. There'll be like a circle of people,
okay,
you know, kind of rapping, and people jump in, you know, and you have to have the confidence and the
to jump in there.
Yeah, you got to jump in, or the person before you is going to go on forever.
Sure. Okay,
you know, so you jump in and you try to one up everybody, and like it's definitely. About, you know, making an impact and leaving an impression. And a lot of times that means like cutting down the other person, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, totally.
So,
which comes back to the confidence thing. Like you have to have the confidence to do that, right?
Right. But at the same time, you know, it's a balancing act, because I think in order, like part of being confident is feeling self-worth, but it's so important to not feel better than other people, in my opinion, because, or to not separate yourself from people, because you have to stay connected in order to make music that connects with people.
Yeah.
Music that resonates with people. Like you have to stay grounded and, you know, down to earth. So that's the most important thing for me. And that's the side of hip hop. Like that's the lane that I navigate.
Sure.
But you also hear me, you know, say some, you know, I got to flex sometimes so that people know. You know what I mean? So they know not to fuck with me, you know?
That's great. Right. You got to put it out there sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've done a lot of things that a lot of people can't say they've done, and I've been rapping for long enough that I know that I'm good at it. So you have to let people know that sometimes.
Sure, of course. Yeah. So what was it like getting on the stage first time, man? Is that a nerve-wracking experience? For you?
Yeah,
like outside of like jazz band and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Like I want to hear about the first time you get up as an MC.
Yeah, the first show I ever played was with Phoenix Jones.
Was it? Really?
Yeah.
And so high school?
No, right? Middle school.
Middle school.
I was 13.
Okay.
And we played a show at I Spy. Have you ever?
I Spy.
Have you ever heard of I Spy? I think
I know that
back
name.
Back then, I didn't even have a proper like sense of the map of Seattle. I was so young. But I think it was like downtown.
I Spy.
Yeah. It got shut down because of a shooting at a show that I was also at
really?
Like the age of 15. But it was a venue in Seattle. It was, one of the many venues that is no longer around, you know?
right.
But yeah, a lot of people probably.
All ages place.
Probably not.
Oh no.
No.
Okay.
I you know, it's a whole nother conversation just about being an all ages performer in Seattle and growing up, you know, in that scene because of the laws that we have, and it was really hard booking shows and certainly hard being able to do all ages shows. There's very few opportunities for that. So I threw a lot of my own shows. But this one was 21 plus.
Okay.
So we were the only, you know, 13 year olds there.
You had little kids.
Yeah.
Just walking
and I remember we had matching camouflage outfits that we got at the Army Surplus store. Yeah. Like we were certainly looking like DMX or somebody from Cash Money, you know, millionaires. So it was pretty, I'm sure it was pretty bad. I know that.
Were you nervous at all, like getting up there? Or were you...
Yeah. I mean, I think we had one song. We performed one song and we practiced for like a week.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think Phoenix Jones did some sort of backflip. He forgot his verse and then he just like, he started rapping my verse, I think.
Yeah.
And he realized he was rapping the wrong verse. And then he just like did a backflip and like started performing in other ways, you know, and then I had to pick up the slack and I was like hyping the crowd up and stuff.
You're the hype man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I've always had like a connection with performing. Like,
sure.
When I was younger, before I was rapping, another thing that I was really into was magic. And I would go around and I would do magic shows.
Yeah.
I never was like,
do you have like a kit?
Yeah. I never did like the birthday circuit or anything like that. Cause I feel like that's kind of degrading or whatever. I would just bless people with my presence. So I would do shows. Like I would show up somewhere, you know, in the lunchroom.
Sidewalk, anything like that?
No, just like the lunchroom. Okay. I'd go to other classrooms.
Sure.
Or when my friends would come over. Or for girls, or you know, whatever scenario, I was just a traveling.
What was your best
traveling
trick?
Magic show? Oh man, I had some really crazy card tricks.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't remember any specific ones.
Can you still do them now today?
No, not really. No, they're pretty complicated, man. Some of these tricks are pretty.
Oh sure, sure. I'll tell you what though, that is still like you come across a guy at like a party or something like mm-hmm. that. And a guy is doing card tricks. I'm there. I'm there for like a solid 2 hours.
Right.
Right. Just watching this guy do his thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because that, I mean, still, people make fun of magic, right? Yeah. Especially at a party setting or something like that. But that is some cool shit
for sure. But at the same time, I must admit, it's kind of creepy at this age. Where, like, if I'm at a bar and some guy comes up to me and whatever girl I'm with and asks us if he can do magic.
That's when you zip your pockets closed.
Exactly. Right? I already feel kind of sketched out.
Right, right.
And that he's just, I don't know, a lot of, maybe it's just the people who decide to do magic at bars that give off that vibe.
It's definitely a vibe thing.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So you start with hip hop and rap in mm-hmm. like middle school, and it keeps on progressing, and you're getting better at it. You're writing more. When do things start taking off?
Not until college.
Okay. And you went to college at UW?
Yeah, I went to UW. Well? You know, for most of my career, I was really lucky, where I pretty much fell into a position, or I just a series of circumstances. I found a really good mentor when I was really young. When I was like 11 or 12 years old, I recorded at a studio called Undercast, which is in Shoreline.
Okay.
And Isaac Meek, he was the engineer there. He owned the studio. And he just took us in, you know. And I asked him, you know, recently, I was like, man, why did you take us in? We were so bad. I was never a rap prodigy. You'll never hear me say that I was like good at rap in the beginning, you know. But apparently, you know, we had heart. And he took us in and he put us through the ropes, you know. And I have to, you know, my parents never fully understood what it meant to me or why, you know, I was doing this, but they never told me not to do it.
Okay.
And, you know, I really got to choose my path. And, you know, Tuesday nights, Monday nights until 2 a.m. on a school night, middle school kid, I would be in the studio.
And they were teachers.
Yeah.
They're letting you do that?
Yeah, man. Craziness. That's pretty great. I mean, they'll be pissed. You know, like if I came home past whatever time I said I was coming home, but they would legitimately let me stay out and go to the studio. And looking back here, I was a little 12-year-old, you know, hanging out with grown men, you know, and I don't think that most parents would have, especially with a lot of the prejudice with hip hop. And I was definitely exposed to a lot of things at a really young age,
uh-huh.
you know, like, you know, I didn't start smoking too young, but I was exposed to, you know, to seeing, you know, drugs and alcohol and sex and stuff like that, you know. So I mean, nothing too crazy. It wasn't like sex happening in the background while I was rapping or anything.
I just had a little daydream right when you said that.
I saw like, that in your eyes,
man. I had the twinkle, right? The twinkle.
No, nothing too awesome.
Oh man, that's so great.
You know, but I was definitely like, you know, I was exposed to a lot of really adult ideas and experiences.
Sure.
And I honestly think that gave me a really good moral compass. And being that age and seeing those things. And then also that now, like, a lot of the people, like, having been exposed to a whole generation of hip-hop before me, you know, I got to see a lot of my elders and a lot of people I looked up to. You know, I got to learn from their mistakes and see the things that they did well and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, you know, by the time that I became an adult, I was able to really hit the ground running, you know, and I developed, going back to my mentor, he put me through crazy artist development, you know, and he would have me doing these different you know, vocal exercises, you know, singing lessons, drum. He had me take drum lessons at the Seattle Drum School.
Really? Get rhythm down.
Yeah. I mean, after 6 months of drum lessons, I was twice the rapper that I was before that.
I never have thought about that, but that sounds like a very fantastic idea.
It's a very, rapping is a very percussive vocal exercise. Yeah. You know, yeah. So, you know, all the different rudiments and stuff that drummers learn, those are all, those can be vocal, you know, cadences and patterns. And those are, you know, a drum navigates the beat in the same way that rapping does. It's a very percussive vocal thing.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And even now, you know, even though I did stop eventually, you know, I got too busy or I got tired of drum lessons, I still, you know, I'm a very percussive rapper and where the drums are and I interact with the drums a lot on the beat and I use that pocket a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're a hip hop artist that I would say is fairly successful, especially here in Seattle. Right. When that started happening, when like the success started to come, was that an easy thing for you to deal with? Like, did you stay grounded when it first started?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's for so long. I mean, I'm telling you, I started rapping when I was like 10 years old.
Sure.
You know, and I went through.
But that doesn't have any fame or notoriety attached to it, right?
But I mean, I for years, even my friends wouldn't listen to my music. Sure. You know what I mean? So to get to a point where people really appreciate your music and appreciate you for that and feel a connection with you. And I mean, some of the things that people have said to me, I've been so lucky, are some of the biggest compliments that I've ever received in life from anybody.
Sure.
So, you know, it certainly will make you feel good and make you feel accomplished, but those experiences and that treatment that's what keeps me humbled, is being connected with the people, is, you know, meeting every fan after every show, you know, and maybe if things get to a level where you're dealing with things like paparazzi and, you know, people really kind of freaking out about you and treating you like you're not human. Uh-huh. I'm not at that level yet. You know, I've had people cry when they meet me. I've had people scream in my face, you know, do these weird things that they, you know, wouldn't normally do to anybody.
Sure.
But I think when you get to a point where the universe kind of changes and it's, you know, the entire universe starts to become centered around you and everywhere you go, everyone's looking at you and people are treating you differently, you know, and expecting things from you or thinking that they really already know who you are. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think that type of treatment, there's no way that doesn't have an impact on you.
Oh, for sure.
Because your whole world has changed. It's a different environment that you have to interact with. But I haven't got to that point yet. You know,
Do you want that? Is that a goal?
I think that comes with some of the things that I do want.
Sure.
I want to reach as many people as possible with my music. I want to leave a legacy and a lasting impact on hip hop and on music. You know, I think that people live forever through their music, and I want to make music that lives forever. You know,
that's great, man.
That's something that I would have to deal with, but not something that I look forward to. You know, I really value my privacy, my friends, and I'm a very approachable person, and I would hate to change. I would hate to have to change that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think you're a fantastic person. I've been sitting here talking with you for an hour, and you're a great dude.
It's been an hour already?
It has.
That's what's up.
It has indeed, man. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Cool. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, yeah. And the record is fantastic. And you said earlier that you're working on the new stuff right now, right?
I was just at the studio. I'm going back to the studio after this.
The secret studio
that
so many of the people that have been on this show said, yeah, I was just at the studio. And I was
really?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, let's see. Gio told me where it was one time.
Okay.
And I was just like, yeah, I have no idea where that is.
That's perfect. It's supposed to be that
I'm going to be the guy crying. Like, I'm going to stand outside and wait for you to come to the door, and I'm going to scream in your face and cry.
Yeah. Yeah, but it wouldn't be weird, though.
It wouldn't be weird because we know each other now.
Yeah, exactly. When a stranger does it to you, it's a little bit, you know, it's crazy.
That's right. That's right. Well, yeah, this Eyes Open. The album is available now. You guys can go and get it at Saul Says. That's SOLSAYS.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it's on Spotify and iTunes and all the other places
it
as well.
It should be on everything. Yeah. Should be on everything. Yeah. You can find me also at Saulzilla on all the social media stuff.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm working on a lot of new music. I'm trying a lot of new things. Expect a lot of music from me in 2015.
Awesome, man. Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's great. That's great. All right, we're going to go out today with this song called Tomorrow, featuring Shehan, which I swear, when I first heard the song, I was like, oh man, that's Caprice.
It's a guy.
It's a guy? Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of Walls. I'm thinking of City of Walls. Is that Caprice?
No, but she's on Lost at Sea. That's the one with Caprice.
Okay.
Yeah, Caprice is on Lost at Sea. Yeah,
that's so funny. I got all three of them wrong.
Yeah. Have you had her in here already?
Yeah. Okay. She is fantastic, awesome. Man.
Yeah, I love her.
God, her voice is good.
Mm-hmm.
And such a great person as well.
For sure.
To top it off. Saul, thank you again so much, man.
Thank you.
A lot of fun talking with you.
Cool.
All right, this is Tomorrow, and we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody.
Yep.
As he spit bars, split lives, not including the sex drive. Two wives, the music and the jet life. Travel bug, gotta move him with the check signs. Soundtrack to the movie of the best times. P.S. I know I'm blessed. Never had an S on my chest. Simply invested in myself. So much that a brother almost burned out. Life living right now. Never been the type to get tied down. That's why I'm on a map trying to evolve. You can bet I'll be back when the beat drops. It ain't about where you've been. It's all about where you're going. Even when shit gets hard, I'ma be back tomorrow. It ain't about where you've been. It's all about where you're going. Even when shit gets hard, I'ma be back tomorrow. Forget about the gangster shit. Forget about the money in the bank for a bit. Think about all the places you've been. The people you've change how you live. Everywhere you go, you carry the world with you. With those that came before, buried deep within you. Living in the future, we forget it all the time. We stand on the shoulders of ancestors and giants. I ain't lying, I'm praying, I feel the weight of my privilege. So I'm soaking up game every day of my pilgrimage. I tell myself, you the shit, but you ain't shit special. Because I'm on the stage, you put me on a pedestal. Fame will do a number to your ego. I'm just trying to stay humble with the people. Put the guns down, bring the peace out. Everybody get free when the beat bounce. It ain't about where you've been. It's all about where you're going. Even when shit gets hard, I'ma be back tomorrow. It ain't about where you've been. It's all about where you're going. Even when shit gets hard, I'ma be back tomorrow. She give me love like don't leave yet. I was already on the next jet. Sao Paulo tomorrow for my birthday. But I can't lie, holidays were the worst days. Never feel alone when I'm with you. I wrote 100 songs while I missed you. Still I left you, but you can trust that. No matter where I go, I'ma come back. I'ma come back. I'ma come back. You can trust that. No matter where I go, I'ma come back.